This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava. This week in the legislature, there has been talk of funding a NASCAR Hall of Fame in Charlotte and of banning cigarettes in restaurants statewide. In some ways, it is business as usual, but as lawmakers approach a crossover deadline next week, the pressure could increase. That crossover deadline requires that a bill be passed in either the House or the Senate, or basically die for the next 2 years. What this all means for the death penalty moratorium and other issues is one topic of our reporters' roundtable today. We'll also talk about plans to cut workers' comp benefits, and later on, what the U.S. Senate's filibuster compromise means for North Carolina Judge Terrence Boyle. With us to talk about all this is Laura Leslie, North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC's Capitol reporter. Hi there, Laura.
Hi, Melinda. Hey.
Laura's at the legislature. Mark Johnson is with us as well. He's a reporter for the Charlotte Observer. Hi there, Mark. Hello. I hear Mark a little bit there. And Kara Bolton is a reporter for the Asheville Citizen-Times. Welcome all.
Thank you.
Thanks for being there. Well, the NASCAR Hall of Fame was getting a lot of headlines this week. Charlotte wants to have the NASCAR Hall of Fame, and it has to come up with a bunch of money to prove to the NASCAR folks that it is worthy of that Hall of Fame. What is Charlotte asking for from the legislature, Mark?
Well, right now, the biggest thing that they're asking for is, or I should say initially asked for, is $10 million over the next 2 years, and that's part of a package too that would help build the Hall of Fame. And also at a ballroom that would connect the Hall of Fame to the Convention Center, so it would make it a big attraction for, you know, not only for tourists, but conventions and other things that bring lots of people who into town who are going to spend money. They've run into a little trouble on that because obviously this is a real tight budget year, so it's, you know, difficult to cough up that $10 million. Everybody thought they had a solution to that when they decided there was some state land in Charlotte that the state could sell for about $10 million, and that would cover things, and it was all sort of related in some way. But we've now run into a little bit of a snag, as there's some question over who exactly owns that land, state government, federal government, and obviously if it involves the federal government, that takes a long time.
Sure, sure. So the governor, of course, took his ride in a race car 2 weeks ago, not the first time he's done that, but this time around the state capitol in Raleigh. There's some appeal to lawmakers about NASCAR. I wonder, Laura or Kara, has anyone come out opposing giving the city of Charlotte some help in getting this NASCAR Hall of Fame?
The dead silence. Well, I guess, Mark, well, I think that's your question, because I have no idea.
There were a couple of hotel business groups not associated with Charlotte. They're supposedly, I guess, they're statewide groups. That raised some concerns about part of the package, which was to let the hotels in Charlotte raise their occupancy tax from 6% to 8%. And they were basically complaining about how this money was going to be used, because some of it was going to be used for basically promoting various tourist attractions. And, you know, and obviously I think there's some competitive issues there. But the hotel owners in Charlotte were perfectly fine with it. They were saying, yeah, you know, you can raise the tax. They figured that the Hall of Fame will bring in more business. And, you know, the attraction here within the legislature is maybe not necessarily as much that everybody's a fan. Senator Dan Klotfelter from Charlotte was pushing the issue in the Senate side, and we sort of joked among the press corps that he heads up the Rhodes Scholars for NASCAR subset. But the attraction to it is that it's a very, very big homegrown industry. That, you know, most of the teams are based in the Charlotte area, north of there. It's a multi-billion-dollar industry for the state, and it could be argued that the Charlotte region and certainly the state may have been a little slow in realizing that this is an industry that is increasingly at risk, because it's gotten so big that the other states are able to take the races away from us.
Mm-hmm. So, well, the state Senate, of course, a few weeks ago passed its budget. The House hopes to pass its version of a budget by next week. What are we expecting to see in that, Kara Bolton?
Well, I think that we'll see a little bit of change in terms of the spending priorities. Of course, education and healthcare remain the state's top priorities, but I think how that shakes out, and there may be a little bit of difference with some of those consumer taxes there, but it's still an unknown factor, and it's still, you know, I'm hearing different buzz that it may not come out next week, that it may take a little longer to come up with something that can get 61 votes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Laura, any observations on what the House may be working on there?
One of the interesting things about it is that they're talking about taking some of the tax increases, and that includes the cigarette tax, and putting it into a separate package. And that would allow them to get some Republican votes for the budget and hopefully marshal enough Democratic support to get the tax increases through in their own legislation. But there's no guarantee about that, of course, because some of the more liberal Democrats are looking for higher cigarette taxes. And so that may not be a gambit that'll pay off for the House leadership.
Mm-hmm. Now, Mark Johnson, Medicaid is folded into this in some way. Are they talking about making changes in the Medicaid in North Carolina?
Yeah, the Senate proposed a variety of basically cuts in Medicaid. And the reason why this is important is Medicaid is probably the biggest driver in terms of budget growth. I mean, it right now makes up about 16% of the entire state budget. That's one program making up 16%. Projections are at its current growth rate, by 2010, it would make up 30% of the state budget. So the growth is phenomenal. And the Senate has proposed a variety of things. They have suggested, for example, they want to cut back a little bit on how much they pay doctors who treat Medicaid patients. They want to take some folks off of Medicaid who are still eligible for Medicare, the federal program, and shift them over to that. You know, there's a number of services where they're cutting back either the hours or the amount of money that they want to pay, because it's a program that the cost is just ballooning because you've got more people who are eligible, and as we all are experiencing when we're on, even if we're on private health insurance, healthcare costs are skyrocketing.
Sure, and this is a program that doesn't get, the federal government kicks in a set amount. It doesn't give more because you happen to have more people within your state who need that care.
Well, to some degree it does. I mean, basically there are parts of the program where for every dollar of state money you spend, you get like $2 of federal money. So it is a combination of state and federal money, and the counties also bear part of the burden. We're the only state, I believe, now that in which the counties, the localities, still pay a part of it. But it is, and we're not the only state with this problem across the country. I mean, Medicaid is the big burden that legislatures are having to deal with.
Right. Now, the lottery was getting so much attention a few weeks and months ago, and included. Do you think this is going to get through this year, Laura?
It's hard to say. I would say that the political leadership obviously wants it to get through, but as far as I know, the Senate Lottery Committee has not met lately, and I think a lot of people are waiting to see what's going to happen with the budget, because there was some discussion of whether or not some language about the lottery should be included in the budget or not. And of course, the budget is in the House and the lottery is in the Senate, and so I think at this point, the Houses are waiting to see, you know, what the other side's going to do before they move forward.
Mm-hmm. Kara?
Well, if I could, just a minute to go back to the Medicaid question, just in the fact that some of the advocacy groups are saying that we have a health care and jobs crisis, not a Medicaid crisis, and they are linking the loss of employer-sponsored health care coverage with the increase of people on Medicaid. And they said, you know, of the 450,000 North Carolinians who have lost coverage, Medicaid was able to cover about 230,000 of them in the past 5 years, and most of these folks have been women and children, and advocacy groups explain that this is why the Medicaid costs are going up. So I just wanted to provide that extra perspective as well.
Sure. Well, before I move on to the lottery, is there not a bill that would make it, would offer some kind of tax break for companies that provided health insurance?
Yes, it would provide a tax break for small businesses that provide health insurance for their employees. And as far as I know, that bill is still in committee. There is some talk about rolling that bill into the budget because, you know, there are, as we've seen with the lottery, bills that are controversial sometimes get rolled into the budget as a way of sort of bypassing a vote on them as a standalone bill. So that may be something that we'll see as well.
Would that, and the set up in that bill? Would that offer a real incentive for, in other words, could the employer write off almost whatever the employer pays for the health insurance?
From the small business owners that I've talked to in Asheville, they said it would provide a real incentive for them. Many of them want to provide health insurance for their employees. However, you know, it's so expensive to do so that they're having a difficult time with that. And so they're either providing reduced benefits or no benefits at all. And they want to keep people and they want to keep good people. And so they see this as a way that would be able to help them.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, of course, there is this deadline coming up shortly, the crossover deadline on the 2nd of June right now, where a bill has to have gotten through one chamber or the other in order to stay alive for the rest of this session, the rest of this two-year session. Mark Johnson, do you have any thoughts before you go on what bills may just be hung out to dry because they didn't get through?
Well, one of the sort of recurring conversations here is how quiet things have been about how, I mean, they've been dealing with the budget, which is obviously the biggest thing the legislature deals with, and it's relatively on schedule at the moment. But, you know, the big controversial issues, like the moratorium on the death penalty, like in-state tuition for illegal immigrants, either make, you know, a brief flash and then they're gone, or never really come up at all. And, you know, the lottery was folded into the budget on the Senate side and appears it will stay there on the House side. And so it really, they're just, you know, there haven't been those big ticket items that you wonder, you know, what's going to happen to them. So, yeah, so there are a lot of things that are just going to be dead for the rest of the session.
And wither on that vine. Well, Mark Johnson, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thanks very much.
Mark Johnson's a reporter with the Charlotte Observer who covers the legislature. Our other legislative correspondents, Kara Bolton from the Asheville Citizen Times and Laura Leslie from WUNC Radio, our Capitol reporter, will continue our conversation in just a moment. That's all coming up right ahead on The State of Things. Support for The State of Things comes from listeners who support North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Penn Cava, and today we are talking about NASCAR, a smoking ban, death penalty moratorium, and other topics of debate in the North Carolina legislature. With us are WUNC Capitol reporter Laura Leslie and Kara Bolton, reporter for the Asheville Citizen Times. Well, let's talk about the death penalty moratorium, because that is a bill that had been proposed several months back, but no substantial action has been taken on it. And this is one of those bills, is it not, that could wither away if no action is taken in either the House or the Senate by next week, by the 2nd of June, in this so-called crossover deadline. Kara?
Yes, and a couple of weeks ago, the Legislative Black Caucus held a press conference and talked about what their legislative priorities are, and clearly the death penalty moratorium is one of their priorities, and I asked them if they would throw their weight behind the bill. You know, they've got enough numbers to withhold some votes on key things like the budget or a lottery, in essence trying to do some horse trading to get that death penalty moratorium on board. There have been groups that have tried to get some press on it, so, you know, more momentum going on it, but it remains to be seen. And I think that unless the Legislative Black Caucus moves forward to this and basically threatens to hold up the process, we may not see it come out this session.
Mm-hmm. How many members of the Legislative Black Caucus are there? What kind of strength do they have?
Well, you would ask that question, and I don't know off the top
I think it's 27.
30. Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, and so I don't know. Yeah, it's about 27.
Okay, a couple dozen there. And of course, the timing would have to be right for them to be able to pull that. The House budget would have to come up for a vote for them to say, we're going to withhold our vote unless you do something on the death penalty, right? Because this crossover deadline is next week.
Yeah, right. So there would have, but they could tell there. I mean, strategically thinking, they could already alert the leadership that that's what they were thinking in order to get that bill out.
Mm-hmm. But, and it's also,
I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to add, it's also worth noting that one of the sponsors of that bill is Hackney, who is also, he's the committee chairman of the committee where the bill is.
Joe Hackney of Orange County.
Joe Hackney, right. So if he wants that bill to come up, there's, you know, he's the one who's going to pull it up in his committee.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to talk about workers' comp, because this is something that has been discussed. There's a bill that would limit the benefits. What's the rationale behind making a change in the workers' comp in North Carolina compensation if you're hurt on the job or so forth?
Well, I guess the rationale is that some of the business groups are saying that there is a lot of fraud and abuse in the system, and that having the potential of lifetime benefits actually provides a disincentive for people who are recovering from injuries to return to work. And so they feel that by limiting the number of weeks to 500 weeks would provide more of an incentive for people to go back to work after they've recovered from injuries, work-related injuries.
Mm-hmm. So that works out to about 9.5 years, 500 weeks. What are the chances of this passing, Laura?
Well, when it came into committee, it's been pulled from committee three times, and last time there were over 500 people here against that bill who were thronging the halls. And the head of NC Trial Lawyers Association, Jim Lohr, was here, their legislative guy, and he said that they'll bring twice that many if the bill comes back up in the House. There's a lot of opposition to it. I think it surprised even the Democratic leadership who's behind this bill in the Senate that there was this much attention to it. And, you know, the people that they brought to talk about it were people with grievous disabilities, people who will never be able to go back to work. And those people also would be cut off from benefits after 10 years. Mm-hmm. You know, and their argument is there may be cases where people do commit fraud, but their argument is that there's a lot more cases where it's not fraudulent, and this is an easy way for businesses to cut their expenses and to not take care of their workers.
And there have been similar bills in other years along these lines. The business lobby would try to get this passed in other years. Is there any sense as to how it got this far this year?
Well, the business lobby is very powerful in North Carolina, and usually, and also Senator David Hoyle, who is from Gaston County, a Democrat, is very sympathetic to business, and so it's not surprising that it's gotten this far. I think that what Laura said in terms of the opposition to it is surprising, and there are also companion bills, but other legislation that is more employee-friendly, but it hasn't seen the light of day.
Mm-hmm. The smoking ban. You laugh, Laura, as a smoker, right? A statewide ban on smoking is being proposed in restaurants.
Right.
And that's now in the Judiciary Committee. I understand there was a lot of talk about this as recently as this morning.
Well, it went through Judiciary, actually, this morning, J-1. But the bill that came out of J-1 was neither a ban nor even as well. OK, it started out as a ban on smoking in restaurants. What it's come down to, it became 75% because, of course, the folks who wanted this bill, the sponsors, had to work and negotiate with the North Carolina Restaurant Association because there was significant opposition. So anyway, so they got negotiated down to, say, 75% of restaurants need to be no smoking.
I mean, 75% of the interior of every single restaurant needs to be no-smoke?
Yes. Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. And that would be by next year. And then by the year after that, then you'd have to have like a sealed off area where people could smoke. But over the course of a 1-hour committee meeting, this thing went from a ban to 50%. And so we're now talking about dividing restaurants in half as smoking and non-smoking and setting up a partition. But the bill doesn't clarify that the partition would need to be sealed. So it's not really clear to me that it would be any different than what a lot of restaurants are already doing.
It almost sounds like the Nicorette patch approach to a smoking ban.
It does. Well, you know, I mean, people talk about these bans in Florida and New York and how well they've worked there. But, you know, as the Jerry Williams, the head of the Restaurant Association, says, this is not New York. You know, this is North Carolina. This is the tobacco state, and 25% of people in this state do smoke. And restaurateurs want the opportunity to make that choice, you know, to have it both ways. And a lot of restaurants don't want to ban smoking. They want the state to do it for them. So it's not clear that this bill really makes anybody happy.
Right. Well, we're talking about what's been happening in the North Carolina legislature, but a big news story from the U.S. Senate earlier this week has a bearing here in the state. Senators reached a compromise on their showdown over the filibuster, the judicial filibuster. Now, that's a decision that clears the way for some of President Bush's more controversial judicial picks. North Carolina Judge Terrence Boyle is on that list of judicial nominees, the president's list. He's a nominee for the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond. And Judge Boyle's nomination has been held up several times in the past. We've asked Raleigh News and Observer reporter Matthew Isley to join us to talk about Judge Boyle's chances now that this filibuster deal has been reached. Welcome back, Matthew.
Hi, Melinda and colleagues.
Well, what do Judge Terrence Boyle's chances look like right now for getting through the Senate Judiciary Committee and getting voted to become a federal appeals judge by the full Senate?
His chances are better now than they've ever been before in the 14 years off and on he's been waiting to move up to that court. Mm-hmm. He's now got both home state senators behind him. And it looks as though, although he's not part of the explicit agreement reached about the nominees, it looks as though he'll probably fare better under the new tone of bipartisan cooperation, at least among the more moderate members from both parties.
Right, because we should explain, part of this filibuster deal was it named some names, but we won't challenge you on these names.
Yeah, and in fact, they agreed not to filibuster some of the nominees about whom they had made the strongest objections. In return, a couple of them are clearly out, but Terrence Boyle is not among, from the perspective of the Democrats, the worst of the worst.
Hmm. So is his chances, you say, look better, but does that mean that any action is going to be taken? Because he's been sort of sitting on the shelf as a nominee, as you mentioned, for 14 years on and off.
Well, he sure has. He actually could come out of he's not yet got a vote in the Senate Judiciary Committee. He did have a hearing and he testified. They could vote on him today, but if not today, then in the coming weeks. They seem to have wanted to get out of the way some of the more controversial nominees first. So I would expect a vote pretty shortly. Republicans do have the votes to pass him out of committee, and assuming they do that, then my guess is he would be confirmed by the full Senate sometime in the next perhaps month or so.
Mm-hmm. So long as there's not a filibuster. And we can't say that that's not likely because,
right,
as we've mentioned, he's been a nominee for so very long.
Yeah, he does have his critics. You know, he's issued some rulings, beg your pardon, that seem to some people to be too extremely conservative. He's made some mistakes in cases that were pretty blatant errors. But he's got quite a complex record. He's also issued a number of very important rulings in favor of the environment. I should add, not necessarily because he's a tree hugger, but because he thinks that's the way the law should have been applied in those cases. He's also been received pretty favorably by criminal lawyers and death penalty lawyers who say he does a fair job. So he's got some critics, but a lot of supporters here at home, and he's really not, at least in every case, in every way, the extremist ideologue that he's being caricatured as in Washington.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, time will tell if Federal Judge Terrence Boyle does go through the process of getting out of the Judiciary Committee in Washington. Matthew Eisley, thanks for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Matthew Eisley is a reporter for the Raleigh News and Observer, and I'd like to thank Kara Bolton with the Asheville Citizen-Times and Laura Leslie, North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC's Capitol reporter. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.